From the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. There we go. On today's show, the Catskill Agrarian Alliance promotes food sovereignty for the Catskills and beyond. We'll chat with Francis Yu, co-executive director of the Alliance, about how they're fostering a healthy and just food system. The solar eclipse is 3 weeks from today, but folks are already preparing. We'll speak to friendly neighborhood astronomer Irene Piazzi about some specifics from the 2024 eclipse, including the path of totality and tips for viewing the eclipse safely. It's Monday. Workshift Live is here. James B. Huntington back after a break. And we'll also check in with Narrowsburg artist Claudine Luxinger about her latest installation at the Narrowsburg Union. It's all coming up. But first, the news from NPR.
Next. Live from NPR News, I'm Korva Coleman. Israel's military raided the largest hospital in Gaza overnight. Officials claim they've killed a top leader with Hamas. As NPR's Jennifer Ludden reports, Israel says Hamas fighters had regrouped at the Al-Shifa hospital after a previous battle last year to push them out.
The Israeli military says it carried out a high-precision operation at Al-Shifa Hospital in northern Gaza. It says Hamas militants opened fire on its soldiers from inside. Gaza's health ministry says an intense fire broke out, trapping people in emergency rooms and suffocating some, including women and children. It also says a number of people were killed or wounded, but did not specify if they were combatants. Al-Shifa is one of the only healthcare centers still functioning in northern Gaza and also houses hundreds of displaced civilians. The Israeli military dropped leaflets in the area, saying it was now a dangerous combat zone and urging people to evacuate to the south. Jennifer Ludden, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
The U.S. Supreme Court is hearing arguments this morning on a case involving the First Amendment and whether the federal government can try to stop what it calls false, misleading, or dangerous online information. A lower court has barred key government officials from contacts with social media companies, saying they were trying to coerce the companies into getting rid of or downplaying some content. The Biden administration rejects that. It says it has its own First Amendment right to persuade companies to act in the public interest. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says it is the responsibility of all governments to combat disinformation. He is attending the Third Summit for Democracy in South Korea.
The Universal Declaration of Human Rights enshrines not only the right to express ourselves, it protects our freedom, and I quote, to hold opinions without interference. The manipulation of information undermines our ability to exercise that fundamental right.
Blinken says all nations should build a stronger environment for information. Stocks open higher this morning as investors await new economic forecasts from the Federal Reserve this week. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average jumped about 80 points in early trading.
Fed policymakers are expected to hold interest rates steady when they meet this week. Members of the central bank's rate-setting committee will update their forecast of how many rate cuts they expect this year. Interest rates in Japan have been below zero for nearly a decade. That could change this week. The Bank of Japan is contemplating its first rate increase in 17 years. Stock in Google's parent company opened higher on news the company's in talks with Apple to license its artificial intelligence technology for use on iPhones. And crude oil prices are up. The average price of gasoline is now about $3.47 a gallon. That's 19 cents higher than a month ago and about 2 cents higher than this time last year. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow's up about 70 points. The Nasdaq is up 250. This is NPR. The Taliban say that Pakistan has launched airstrikes in Afghanistan's territory along both country-shared border. At least 8 people were killed. Now the Taliban's defense minister says Afghanistan will strike Pakistani posts on the border. The escalation comes after militants killed 7 soldiers in Pakistan's territory. Pakistan says it is targeting militants who belong to an offshoot of the Taliban. The FBI has returned 22 pieces of stolen art to Japan. The artifacts are believed to have been looted from Japan during World War II in the Battle of Okinawa. NPR's Juliana Kim has more.
The Japanese antiques were found last year inside the residence of a World War II veteran in Massachusetts. His children discovered them while sorting through his belongings after he had passed away, according to the FBI. The items included a hand-drawn map, ceramics, and portraits dating back as far as the 1700s. The family later alerted authorities that they may be in possession of valuable stolen art. On Friday, the FBI announced that the items had been successfully returned to Japan. According to an FBI database, there are still several Japanese antiques missing, including portraits and a royal crown. Juliana Kim, NPR News.
A volcano in southwestern Iceland has erupted for the fourth time over the past few months. The volcano was not far from Iceland's capital, Reykjavik. Magma began to flow from the volcano over the weekend. A nearby fishing town of about 4,000 people had already been evacuated to safety. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Lodestar Foundation, inspired by the principle that helping someone else less fortunate is a path to a happier, healthier, and more meaningful life. Learn more at LodestarFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Catskills Agrarian Alliance is a comprehensive food sovereignty project built from the ground up by farmers in Delaware, Otsego, and Schoharie counties in New York State. For a decade, the community of farmers have been working on alternative production and distribution to redefine farming in New York and beyond. Joining us now is Francis Yu, co-executive director of the Alliance. Francis, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Ken. How's it going?
Good. Thanks for being here. Can you explain to folks who may not know what food sovereignty means and how that weaves into the mission of the Catskill Agrarian Alliance?
So food sovereignty, to me, is a fairly basic concept in which all the actors of a food system, from the producers, that can include, you know, farmers, folks who work to take food into value-added products, folks who are in between that process, who are in the logistics and the delivery, and to consumers. And they can range from a wide variety of different kinds of consumer types, from, you know, folks who are directly in the community who are grappling with food access. They can be institutions like schools and hospitals, and anywhere in between, really. And the concept of food sovereignty is that as folks who are participating in this food system, that we should have a say, that we should have a stake in what that system looks like and making sure that it serves us in the way that, you know, makes sense and respects the labor, the time, and the material conditions that we're grappling with.
And the Alliance,
so that's kind of like the concept in essence of that.
Yeah, and I was going to say the Alliance models that idea by promoting the right of people to define their own system of food and agriculture. Can you talk a little bit about why that's important and why it's needed?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the kind of system that we navigate right now in terms of like the status quo, globalized and industrialized food system is that a lot of the players are kind of put aside, right? A lot of the small-scale family farms who really think about sustainable production, who do organic farming, who are in touch with their communities and neighbors, we don't really get the kinds of subsidies and support that big monocrop producers get from the USDA, from other actors that are in the government, or like really these large agro business corporations who receive millions, billions of dollars to continue their operations. On the flip side of that, you have a lot of communities who grapple with legacies of different kinds of policies that make food access for them really difficult, if not impossible. And so what we're trying to do is try to build connections, deep relationships with those folks at the different parts of the food system, to try to understand and respond to their needs and really kind of center those needs as a response to a very uneven and outright kind of inequitable food system.
Well, let's talk about that because there have been, and we've covered this too, about how it has been inequitable, especially a lot of historic inequality perpetuated by the USDA against marginalized communities. How are you promoting the inclusion and empowerment of those communities within your work?
Yeah, so we work with farmers and producers in our region
truly understand and provide the kinds of supports that they need. A lot of the issues really kind of come down to getting the food to different kinds of market channels, right? So we operate a CSA that this past year served just a little bit more than 17,000 families and created about $500,000 of revenue that we were able to pass on to our local farms. But that process of aggregating and distributing food for an individual farm is incredibly, you know, it's a big, incredible cost barrier. So by working to aggregate and provide like the different kinds of facilities and processes to move that food to different consumers, again, we're talking about institutions, but we're also talking about individual consumers who are able to provide a service that farmers, you know, normally take on an enormous cost to be able to do. And I think on the other side of that too is like for the consumer end, which is really how I got pulled into this work, they're responding to long legacies of things like redlining and segregation that make their neighborhoods food deserts, as I like to call them, food apartheid, because there was an intention behind the policies that create these kind of like landscapes where you can't access fresh, nutritional food from your region. So we work with these communities to understand what their needs are, and we build that bridge between those communities and our producer farmer communities to create a much more responsive food system.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Francis Yu, co-executive director of the Catskill Agrarian Alliance. You are also part of a farm. You are part of the Star Root Farm in Charlottesville, New York. You mentioned how you were brought into the Agrarian Alliance. How does this sort of infuse and inspire what you do with your work at the farm?
Yeah, so I got my start with the Alliance via Star Root Farm. We started coming up to the farm, me and a bunch of friends, as we were doing mutual aid work in New York City, to build a connection with the farmers here who were growing our food that we were using for our pop-ups or using for our distribution events with our mutual aid partners. And coming here and just getting connected to a farm practice and being connected to the land was a very beautiful and sort of like moving kind of experience for me, coming from a very kind of institutional space. Before agriculture, I was actually doing affordable housing in New York City, so it's quite a little bit of a career change and shift. But in working here and farming, it just felt really true to me. It kind of connected me to some of my own immigrant foodways and my own sort of like story with my family. So something deeply resonated, and I felt really kind of called to stay and pursue farming and agriculture work. And then I think the shift in terms of moving from the farm to this role, which is a little bit more comprehensive and thinking from like a systems perspective, was really responding to this gap, right? I think since 2020, we've only seen the need at food pantries grow. We've seen the line at distributions continue to get longer and longer. And the support for small-scale farmers still not really kind of need to be, or it's not where it needs to be. And so I think kind of taking my, like, policy and systems thinking approach to the space was a way to try to understand what the gaps were and to move strategically to like how we can think from a broader, more systems perspective.
And on the Alliance's website and in your values statement, you talk about reciprocal stewardship, how the current agricultural revolution needs to be built around the development of this reciprocal relationship with our ecology. Can you talk a little bit about reciprocal stewardship?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that we've gotten to where we are in terms of a uneven and inequitable food system but also in the sense of where we are with climate change, because we have prioritized, we have centered a relationship to nature, to the land, to earth, from purely this like extractive and exploitative lens. And we're seeing that everywhere, right? That's not just a regional thing, that's a global thing at this point. And I think this idea and notion of reciprocity, for me, comes from Robin Wall Kimmerer and in her writings about like an indigenous relationship and knowing and building with the land, really centers this idea of reciprocity, that we are an extension of nature and have a responsibility to nature to be able to develop the kinds of relationship where we can grow things beautifully in understanding and responding to the limits of nature, but also the bounty of nature. So I think for me, like that's the idea of reciprocity, and where it stems from is this like deep indigenous knowing and relationship. But it also extends to other relationships, not necessarily just with land, but the communities and the people that we serve. And so I think that's really critical to how we operate, both in our growing and our production practices, but also the kinds of relationship that we try to foster in our work.
And we talked about the inclusion and empowerment part of those relationships, but then there's the relationship of labor itself and how, you know, historically, it's been classist and racist labor practices for farm workers. How does the Alliance strategize to help recognize that and also promote living wages for farm workers?
Yeah, it's incredibly difficult because of the various systemic things that are at play, right? So big industrial agribusinesses and corporations receive the lion's share in terms of subsidies, grant, and funding support from the government, and still exploit their workers. And for small-scale farmers, because it's so hard to enter a market and meet the margins that you need to, a lot of them will self-exploit to try to continue their businesses. And so for us, you know, part of our shift to trying to operate as a nonprofit is to be able to access different kinds of funds and funding streams to be able to support the work, to make sure that our farmers get paid a living wage, that everyone on our team gets paid a living wage as we try to grow and build our work. But it's difficult because I think the current market conditions don't necessarily recognize the importance of growing in a way that is sustainable or paying people equitably. And that's not something that's specific to agriculture. That's something obviously that we see in all different kinds of sectors. But I think that historically we see a lot of expectation play out for farm workers. So I think a big part of our work is trying to understand where we can dive into more healing generative labor practices with our farm workers. And I think a developing body of work for us is to try to understand where we can support other farms and producers in a network to be able to do the same.
You recently came out with your 2023 annual report, which is available at CatskillsAgrarianAlliance.org. It's a 17-page report, very thorough, lots of information in there. What's something that you want folks to know about what you guys have been working on and that you're most proud of? There's so many things to highlight. 10 farmers employed, 20,000 pounds of vegetables grown for mutual aid, over 1,700 households fed. Talk a little bit about what you guys are doing and what's coming up.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, that annual report is a great snapshot of these kind of amazing things that we've done over the past year. But I think some of the highlights, I'll just shout out a project that I'm very intimately involved in, is the development of the West Ranch Commons, which is a community land trust commons project to offer affordable land access for queer, trans, and BIPOC producers. in our region to really make this issue of land access, which is the number one barrier for farming and agriculture for new farmers, for farmers coming from historically marginalized communities, to be able to see farming as a livelihood. So it's a 157 acre project located in Hamden, which is in Delaware County. And we are looking to offer, affordable farmland access for folks who are trying to get their feet wet, really kind of start something new, and do it in a way that is collaborative and really thinking, again, from this idea of a reciprocal relationship to land. So it's a community land trust model that is going to decommodify this land and put it away from a speculative market and really kind of center this idea of community stewardship, which is not necessarily something you always see when we talk about farmland access, but I think is an important way for us to really put into practice our values around land access.
How can folks get involved or learn more about strengthening the local food system?
I think trying to figure out ways to know your farmers, understand where your food is coming from. There's a really big effort right now around the USDA Farm Bill, which should be coming out soon. So I think if folks were to get in touch with their local food actors, their local food policy councils, the mutual aid groups that are working around food justice and food distributions, there's a real opportunity for folks to grapple with what's going on with my regional food system, to understand from a policy perspective where they might be able to provide advocacy and support. And then also to just like build relationships directly with your farmers and producers. I think it's important for us to understand that when we invest in farmers who are growing organically, who are growing with like a sustainable lens and mindset, that we're also supporting these practices, that we're also supporting practices that are reciprocal to the land, that combat climate change, that like develop a stronger regional economy. So I think just, like honestly, getting to know your farmers, getting to understand where they're coming from, supporting their businesses, like that for me is like the number one thing that folks can do.
Francis Yu, co-executive director of the Catskills Agrarian Alliance. You can find more information about the alliance at catskillsagrarianalliance.org or also follow them on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you so much for talking to us about the alliance this morning and all your great work.
Thank you so much, Tim.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, tips for the eclipse. This is Radio Chatskill.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
When he was a kid, Scott Barry Kaufman took a test that determined the direction of his life.
I know I took this test. I knew it was a terrifying experience. And then I know I was shipped off, taken away from all my friends. So that was like pretty traumatic.
One man's mission to break down the barriers that held him back. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Monday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Thursdays at 9, it's Connect the Dots with me, David Christian. It's the freeform show where each song leads to the next by way of a musical connection. Think of it as a dive into music's liner notes, exploring the behind-the-scenes connections that show that the distance between genres and decades is often shorter than we think. That's Connect the Dots, Thursday nights at 9, here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We'll get to tips on the eclipse in just a minute, but first we're going to talk to James B. Huntington with WorkShift Live. James B. is here. James, it's unusual for a Monday that I don't have your theme here, so if you want to sing 9 to 5, that's fine.
Working 9 to 5.
We are still recovering from a little bit of a power outage. Our computer was fried, so some of that material is still getting back online. Ooh. But we've got you live. Thank you so much. I hope you had a good break. We didn't hear from you last week, so let's jump into it. What's the latest we have for unemployment figures in our listening area?
Yes. Well, these are for January, and Sullivan County came in at 4.2% unemployment, Orange at 4.0%, Ulster at 4.1%, Wayne at 4.7%, and Pike County at 4.8%. All of these were worse, varying amounts, only small amounts for the three New York counties, which actually were less than how much the national rate increased from December to January. But the Pennsylvania ones had a bad month. So we don't know. This is the second down month in a row, at least for some of these counties. So we're still in good shape with unemployment around here. Don't kid yourself. The three orange ones are about the same as the nation as a whole. So we'll see where it goes, but we don't want any of these trends to keep worsening.
Exactly. And let's talk a little bit about some of the economic-related news coming out this week. Another look at what the Fed's going to do, I guess.
Well,
we're getting a little static on your line.
I have a listing here of economic events around the world, actually, uh-huh, that are happening over the next week. And one of them is the Federal Reserve is expected to keep interest rates on hold, but will provide an outline of when it may start to cut, which people are just itching for that information. But they can't possibly really know. I mean, this is all just reading tea leaves, no matter how officially they frame it. So, but that's something that will come out on Wednesday. A couple other things that may matter here. Today we have our Supreme Court saying they will listen to whether people should be allowed to censor content.
Oh, yeah. Getting a little static on the line there, Jim. Hello. All right, we're gonna take a quick break, and we're gonna try to get back to James B. Huntington. The little problem with the line there. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
We are proud to serve our country, to serve our local communities, to wear the uniform, to be a soldier, to serve abroad when and where duty calls. We are ready to stand with our brothers and sisters to defend, to serve, to fight. We're always ready. We're always there. We are the New York Army National Guard.
Sponsored by the New York Army National Guard.
Hi, I'm Kusar Grace KG, host of the Music Emporium. 2 hours of great music right here on Radio Catskill. Sometimes I start out with a little bit of talk concerning things in the world for the week. Then I jump into some tunes that you will enjoy. Jazz, funk, blues, and more. So come and hang out with me, the Music Emporium, Tuesday night, 7 to 9, right here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and we're trying to join James B. Huntington back for WorkShift Live, having a little problem with the line there. James B., you there?
Yes, I am.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I was saying that our Supreme Court is going to hear arguments about how far the government can go in pressing social media companies to censor content it doesn't agree with. That's sort of a disturbing trend, along with something else we'll talk about in a few minutes. Also, the Bank of Japan is making a decision on interest rates. That's noteworthy because they have been in such a recession for so many decades, really, not exaggerating. Then I mentioned what the Fed is doing, and then we have FedEx reporting in on Thursday, which is important because it is a real company, a real large company, I should say, and they're dealing with a pilot strike as well as lackluster recent results. So then we have some around the world, but not as significant to us as these.
All right. And we're also looking at some potential economic impact from that proposed TikTok ban. The House passed this ban. It's now potentially going into the Senate, although they haven't really taken any action on it. But some of the creators are talking about it, about the potential economic impact of a ban. What do we know?
Well, I think we know the national precedent of this ban, and that's that it's probably unconstitutional. About economics. So it turns out there are a lot of people who are getting paid for doing things on TikTok.
Hey, James, I'm sorry, but we're still having some problems with the line here. I'm really sorry about that. I'm going to try you one more time in a little bit. But first, let's just transition here. We're live on the air at Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Local Nuremberg artist Claudine Luxinger received an MFA from the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Art and a BFA from Marywood University with an emphasis on drawing and painting. Her new exhibit is Quantum Entanglement, an experimental art installation. It's on view now through May 20th at the Union Digital Gallery at the Narrowsburg Union. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi spoke to her.
Good morning, Claudine, and welcome to Radio Chatskill.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So you are, as we speak, in the digital gallery at the Narrowsburg Union in Narrowsburg, New York. So tell us about what's going on in the digital gallery.
Sure. Well, first of all, it's an honor to be showing there, and I think it's the only digital gallery in probably our surrounding three counties, so we're very lucky to have it in Narrowsburg. I have a show there that's a multidisciplinary art installation that's experimental, and it consists of, mixed media drawings, sculpture, photography, paintings, and a media wall that consists of two framed iPads and several vertically installed TV monitors, hence the experimental part.
And how does this relate to the digital world?
Well, I mean, I don't think any other gallery has a huge projector that the facilitator has in the digital gallery. And I don't know of any other artist that has painted on a transparent substrate and hung it over TV monitors so that it's backlit. So I think that's how the digital aspect gets combined into the artwork.
Now, did you work with someone else to create this show, or did you do this yourself?
I worked with the facilitator of the digital gallery, who's known as PC.
Pat Carullo.
Yes, Pat Carullo. And it was his brilliant idea to actually take photographs of the sculptures and project them onto that large media wall. And then he manipulated them to move them. And I love movement in artwork, and I always try to have some kind of movement in artwork. So that was brilliant. And he also had the idea of painting on the poly transparent substrate so that the paintings would hang in front of the monitors. And that was brilliant as well.
Yes, well, it's very effective. I saw it, and it had a meditative quality to it and also had some soothing music in the background.
Yes, and that was part of the whole installation, because when you walked into the room, I wanted to transport you into another place. And I have music that is known as 528 Hz frequency music. And if you're familiar with any kind of sound healing music, this is what they call the love frequency. Yes, that adds a very meditative quality to it, yes.
And how long have you been working on this project?
I think I started at the Vermont Studio Center last January, and I started experimenting with methods and materials there. And spent 2 weeks just experimenting. I experimented with jute, wax, copper, what else? Copper mesh. And I really wasn't getting the form that I wanted. So I was awarded another residency at the Horn Dorset Colony, which is just north of Cooperstown. And I was going to be there for 2 weeks. And I said to myself, the first week, I'm just going to focus on drawings. And the second week, I'm going to focus on the 3D work. So that's where I really started to push the material. With the drawings, if you look at them closely, you'll see that there's wax pastel, colored pencil, paint, and spray paint. And I started with the wax pastel, and then I would just add another element, add another layer, add another element. So that was the experimental phase of the drawings. And then I found spray foam. And the second week, funny side story, I wanted to add more playfulness to the work, so I ordered a pair of roller skates.
Really? Okay.
And they were delivered right from Amazon to the residency. And every morning I would roller skate in my studio to music because I didn't want to get tight and stuck, and I wanted to be more creative. And that was kind of my creative outlet or creative way to push myself.
I love it. I'm going to have to keep that in mind for myself.
And you really, it's so much fun. You always feel good. So I started experimenting there, and that's when I really decided to use spray foam. And I mentally said to myself, I'm going to draw with the spray foam. So it's been about, to answer your initial question, about a year in the works.
Now, you had a previous installation at the Digital Gallery at the Union in Narrowsburg, along with Alexis Sirach.
Yes, I did. Yep, and that was in September of 2022. And thankfully, it was that installation that we submitted to the other residencies. And Alexis and I did go to the Vermont Studio Center together and work together there.
So it must feel really satisfying to have brought this work so far along and to have the expertise of PC, a.k.a. Pat Carullo, creative energy involved as well.
Yes, PC is a big part of it because this isn't the first project that we have worked on together. We actually worked on a project at Bethel Woods. If you notice, when you walk in Bethel Woods grounds, as you enter the museum, you see some large stone statues as well. And Pat asked me to paint the portraits of the female performers of the original Woodstock Festival. And he projected those females onto the stone sculpture. So Pat brings a lot of energy and passion to any project. And a lot of words, and I tend to not talk as much, so it's good to have a partner like that.
Claudine Lessinger's Quantum Entanglement, a multidisciplinary art installation, will be on view at the Union in Narrowsburg until May 20th. For more information, you can go to thenarrowsburgunion.com. Well, I hope folks take the time to come and experience, because it is an experience, this extraordinary display.
Thank you. Yes.
You are welcome.
Culture reporter Valerie Manzi. We'll take a break, and when we come back, now tips on the eclipse. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Matt Hurtado. Join me on a journey where pixels meet melodies and controllers become conductors. This is Virtual Soundscapes, the show that transports you to the sonic realms of video game magic. In this journey, we'll uncover the hidden treasures of video game soundtracks from the classics to modern day, and speak with industry veterans. Join me every Thursday night at 10 p.m., only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And local expert Irene Pease is known as the Friendly Neighborhood Astronomer, and she'll be at the Mamikating Environmental Education Center for a talk on Saturday about everything you need to know about the upcoming solar eclipse in April. And our Friendly Neighborhood Astronomer joins us now. Good morning, Irene.
Good morning, Tim.
We've had a few fits and starts this morning. I wonder if it has anything to do with the stars not aligning. I'm not sure. Can you tell me?
So you'll be a lot of gravity.
Yeah. So let's talk about this eclipse. Lots of people talking about it already. And you know, mainly where to go and where to see it, but you're going to cover in your talk on Saturday at the Environmental Education Center in Mamikating about some of the basics of the moon cycle and phases. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I'd like to talk about the cycles and phases of the moon in the context of eclipses, because I feel like that's something that a lot of people may or may not have a solid background on. So we talk about the phases of the moon and just the alignment between Earth, Moon, and Sun that can give us different types of eclipses. And then we get kind of into the solar eclipses more specifically.
And then you also talk about the mechanics of these lunar and solar eclipses. What do you mean by the mechanics of it?
Well, We don't have an eclipse every month for a reason. So every month the moon goes through the new moon phase, the full moon phase, which are the phases that we would have for a solar and or lunar eclipse. But we don't have the eclipses every month. So I talk a little bit about how the moon's orbit can affect that. Like it's tilted relative to like kind of the line between the Earth and Sun. So I just have some visuals and try to get across that concept of why we have phases and why we don't have eclipses every month, and why it's special when we do have an eclipse, especially a solar eclipse. Lunar eclipses are much more common, but the solar eclipses are a little bit more rare, and they're very rare to see in a specific spot on the Earth.
Yeah, this is really rare. And it's, how long has it been since the last total solar eclipse? Then how long will it be before the next one?
So the last solar eclipse, it was visible from New York, specifically from Sullivan County. It was almost 100 years ago.
Wow.
And it's going to be another several decades. I think it's 2079 or so before there's another total solar eclipse in this area. It'll be visible.
Wow. And so, you know, we've kind of gone over this and we've heard about this too, but it really is important to remind folks about how to view this. People are going to want to go out and just maybe look up, but there are ways to do this, to do it safely. Can you tell folks some of the tips about the eclipse safety?
Yeah, safety is really important when you're looking at the sun.
Did we lose you? Oh, dear. Just when we started talking about the sun.
On some websites, just make sure they have the proper ISO certification. You can also use properly filtered telescopes or binoculars that might be hard to come by at this point if you don't already have it ordered. Maybe check some local libraries. The SUNY Sullivan might have some eclipse glasses, some materials available. And also you can make a pinhole camera. There's a lot of ways to do that with very basic things, just punch a little pinhole in a piece of aluminum foil and kind of project that onto the ground, onto a white sheet or a piece of paper, and you can see the sun, the shape of the sun that way very safely.
So some of those old-fashioned tricks could still work, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, even when I'm going out to view totality, I'm still going to bring like all the fun things just to see the partial, because there's so many fun things you can do with that. Like I said, just a piece of aluminum foil and a little pin or a needle to prick a little hole in it. One of the last eclipses I went to, people had like just kitchen colanders. So just a piece of metal that has a whole bunch of small holes in it. And shining that onto, or just holding that above like a big white sheet that's spread out on the ground. And you can see the shape of the sun as it's changing during the eclipse. So a lot of fun ways that you can do that. And there's resources online at NASA for building slightly more complex kind of solar viewing boxes or just projecting the image onto the ground.
I mentioned in the introduction, Friendly Neighborhood Astronomer. That's your website, friendlyneighborhoodastronomer.com. How did you get involved as in astronomy? I understand that that started out in college.
It did. Yeah, I like to say I wound up hanging out with the wrong crowd. I was a physics major, but so many people who were majoring in physics at the school I went to did a double major because it wasn't very many more classes. So I hung out with a lot of the astronomy majors and kind of got sucked into that. I had some fun astronomy jobs in college and just never gave up on it. Just really enjoy sharing the night sky with people. So I've been doing that ever since.
And you also built a telescope, is that right?
Yes, I have a homemade telescope. I built it with the help from a friend in his garage in Tucson out on the east side of the city. So I built it to be as big as it could possibly be and fit in the car that I owned at the time, which was not practical for living without a car while I was in New York City. But now it gets around a little bit more now that I'm out of the city, out in Sullivan County, can drive around and enjoy the dark skies out here.
And was that telescope called Brooklyn's Prettiest Telescope? Is that right?
Yeah, we named it BPT, Brooklyn's Prettiest Telescope, just to give it a fun name. It's not a factual statement. It's just a fun name.
Yeah.
There are other very pretty telescopes in Brooklyn, but I think she's one of the prettier ones.
you also worked at the American Museum of Natural History as an astrophysics educator. You've taught physics at York College, CUNY. Also a frequent presenter at the Hayden Planetarium Astronomy Live series and a producer of the Hayden Planetarium's video blog, Skylight. You said you kind of got sucked into the wrong crowd, but what is it about the skies and the stars that just keeps you so engaged?
I really like physics. That's where I started. And gravity kind of drives the universe. There's, I don't know if you remember the old AT&T commercials, like from the 80s. I'm kind of dating myself, but there was a reach out and touch someone kind of slogan that they had. And I feel like there's two fundamental forces in the universe that are infinite. Like they have an infinite range. One is gravity, which you can't really feel. But the other is light. So we have light that can travel like from the far reaches of our universe and like bounce around in a telescope and into your eyeball. And I feel like that's just really amazing that we can kind of sense and experience so much of the universe through light. It's also something that I think kind of unites all of humanity. Like the stars that we see in the sky tonight are pretty much the same that our ancestors seen like throughout history. And so like looking up at the night sky and kind of being in awe and wonder and just enjoying the view is something that people have done like through the ages. And so I think it's a neat way to connect not just to our past, but to other people in the world today, because we're all looking up and seeing pretty much the same night sky.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Do you get that reaction from folks as you're teaching or talking to them in these different conversations about the stars and the skies? Do they kind of see that at that level, that like really human level versus maybe the physics or science level?
Sometimes the physics and science level. I mean, people seem to have the idea that, yeah, when we're looking at the sky, we're looking at things that are far away. And there are some misconceptions about that. Like people say, well, maybe some of the stars we're seeing have gone out now. And they say, well, actually, the stars you see in the night sky are still relatively close to us. Like if you're looking without a telescope, even a lot of the nearby galaxies, like they're not that far away compared to like the vastness and the age of the universe. But they still have this sense of like, wow, I'm looking kind of back in time. I'm looking at something so far away and getting a chance to experience that. I think people really enjoy that.
You on your website, friendlyneighborhoodastronomer.com, also have a look at the current skies. This is currently we're kind of leading up to, I guess, the eclipse. What can you tell us about the skies and, of course, the equinox?
Oh gosh, the equinox. That's pretty.
We forgot about that. The equinox getting overshadowed this year.
I know.
Literally,
it's a busy month with the equinox and then the eclipse. And my current skies on my website are a little. They're not exactly current, but I'll get them current before the eclipse. The equinox, I think, is exciting. Again, that's something that people have observed for thousands of years, right? This is an important part of our calendar and, like, knowing when to do certain things, certain times of year. One thing you can do on an eclipse is you can mark due east and due west, which is really handy if you're out, like, just trying to eyeball stuff on your property, know which way is what, set up a sundial, whatever. It's a fun thing to do on the equinox. But the other things that we have that are current in the night sky and really in our daytime sky, I guess, that will be interesting for the eclipse is we have two planets that are out. The two planets that are brightest in our sky, Venus and Jupiter. And you can actually see Venus during the day if you know exactly where to look. It's a little bit tricky, but if you know where to look, you can spot it during the day with the full sun out. Just have to be careful not to actually look at the sun. So those two planets are going to be well on display during the eclipse. If people want to practice, you know, kind of looking for them, Jupiter kind of just after sunset or Venus before sunrise, they will be out on the day of the eclipse. And even in the part of the eclipse where it's still partial, like through Sullivan County, it's going to be full enough. It's not going to be full eclipse, but it'll be darker, like noticeably darker and easier to see those two planets during the daytime.
And you have some groups that folks, if they wanted to get involved with, could, you know, learn more. What are some of the local mm-hmm. groups for astronomy that folks can learn about?
So our local group is the Catskills Astronomy Meetup, which you can find on the Facebook page. So I've been kind of helping John Kosajinski with the outreach. So John Kosajinski, he's basically the one who is kind of sending out the emails and organizing the meetups for that. So if people are interested, you can email him on the Facebook page and find out about all the other observing events and fun things we have going on here. I'm also a member of the Rockland Astronomy Club, which is down further south in the state. And I'm still a member of the Amateur Astronomers Association in New York, which is the New York City group.
All right. And then your talk, of course, is coming up Saturday, Sun, Moon, and Totality, the 2024 eclipse. It's at the Mammocating Environmental and Education Center. And that's Saturday at 1. And you can find out more information and registration at the website, mammocating.org. We've been speaking to our friendly neighborhood astronomer, Irene Pease. Thank you so much for enlightening us on what's going on with the eclipse and other stuff in the skies. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, we'll take a break and we'll try to get James B. Huntington back to finish up Work Shift Live. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hey, it's Mark, host of the Ambient Barn, Sunday nights at 11 here on Radio Catskill. Join me this week as we listen to film music scored with synthesizers. Only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
There's no need to make a trip all the way to the government center in Monticello for DMV needs. Many of the services of the Department of Motor Vehicles are available closer to home at 8 convenient locations in Jeffersonville, Bloomingburg, Grahamsville, Livingston Manor, Wurtsboro, Liberty, Hortonville, and Narrowsburg. Services include registrations, CDL license renewals, plate returns, and more. DMV appointments and more information at sullivanny.us. Paid for by Sullivan County Government.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And we've got James B. Huntington back on the line for the finish of Work Shift Live. Sorry for all the tech difficulties we've had this morning, Mr. Huntington. But let's just finish up with how the stocks and the numbers did last week.
Okay, over the last 2 weeks, actually.
Oh, right.
I wasn't here last
week.
Gold, $21.52, up $69, reaching all-time highs. Silver, $25.10, up $2.04. That was overdue. Silver was lagging for a long time. Now the ratio is about 86, silver to gold. Dow, 38,715 minus 372, a losing week. Some concerns about a crash are popping in there. NASDAQ, 15,973, down 302. Same sort of story there. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, 81.93. That's up $2.21. They have price increases going for reasons beyond refining problems. Bitcoin, 67,820, up 26.77. Slow down, but it's still going up, up, up. Quite a trend there. British pound, 1.2735, up just over half a cent, getting investing attention. Same thing with the euro at 1.0897, another half cent or so up. And the Japanese 100 yen coin is hanging out at 67 cents.
All right, lots to get through. Thank you so much for your patience with us and your understanding. James B. Huntington, Work Shift Live, joins us every Monday for local economic news and perspective. Thank you, sir.
Have a good day.
All right, we will wrap it up now. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, presenting the Warren Haynes Band and the Dreams and Song Symphonic Experience. Friday, June 7th. Tickets on sale now. Ticket information at bethelwoodcenter.org.
Hi, I'm Kusar Grace KG, host of the Music Emporium. 2 hours of great music right here on Radio Catskill. Sometimes I start out with a little bit of talk concerning things in the world for the week. Then I jump into some tunes that you will enjoy. Jazz, funk, blues, and more. So come and hang out with me. The Music Emporium. Tuesday night, 7 to 9, right here on Radio Catskill.
Far-right Republicans in Texas continue to reshape the party.
The party 10 years ago was effectively a cheerleading society for Republican elected officials. And my question always was, why?
I'm Mary Louise Kelly, how the Texas GOP keeps changing. On All Things Considered, from NPR News.
Your NPR station, Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. It's just before 11 o'clock. On Point is next. Today's forecast: intervals of clouds and sunshine with a rain or snow shower in spots. It's a breezier than it was yesterday, high 39. Cold tonight, low 24. And those temperatures staying around that temperature range. 35 the high tomorrow with a couple of snow showers, a little snow at times, Tuesday night into Wednesday. And by the time the snow showers are over, we could see about an inch of accumulation.
Support comes from Sullivan 180. Building healthy communities through people, places, and policy, one degree at a time. More information at Sullivan180.org. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering four counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River. RiverReporter.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hey, it's Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Aisha Roscoe.
One of the things you can count on from NPR and this station, we've got your back when it comes to reporting the news, bringing you facts you can count on. You can help by donating a vehicle you no longer need.
That car could be worth hundreds of dollars in support or more as a donation.
Think about it.
We accept any vehicle, running or not, including cars, trucks, boats, RVs, motorcycles, and more. Donate at WJFFradio.org. WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello. On air at 90.5 FM.
streaming online at wjffradio.org. We are Radio Catskill.